Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is head of music at Flipagram, John Bolton. But first, the news came out earlier in the week that Universal is making $4 million a day from streaming. That's Universal Music. $4 million a day from streaming. That's a lot of dough. And this is just one record label. Now, granted, they're the largest, but still, $4 million a day. That's nothing to sneeze at. Their parent company, Vivendi, in the earnings statement this week, said that streaming is responsible for 34% of UMG's total income. That's Universal Music Group. Versus about 22% for downloads and 27% for physical product. So, CDs and vinyl is actually making them more money than downloads. Downloads are dropping like a stone, while streaming music is jumping into the stratosphere. Now keep in mind that this does not include the latest Drake album called Views, which is just crushing it online. The first week, it set a record for streams at 247 million. So that's not even included in this because that's just recently that it happened. And of course, we're talking about the first quarter of the year that the $4 million a day applies to. So you would think this is a good thing, right? It's a good thing for artists. But the problem here is that the $4 million a day doesn't all trickle down to the artist. No, what happens is if an artist signs to a record label, they get a percentage of the income. On physical product, it's somewhere between 12% and 15% if you're a baby band, as they would say, a new band, new artist. And it might go up to 20% if you're a pretty successful artist, and if you're a superstar, you might even get a few more points after that. It's a little bit higher for streaming income or for digital income in general, where it's somewhere around 20% for a baby band, and it might go to 25%. And a real superstar can push it more, and some have pushed as far as 50%. Even so, what that means is the majority of the income that's coming into the record label, the artists are never seeing. Now, take it another step. Now, don't forget that this income goes against any expenses that the artist has incurred. So in other words, they're recouping the money that the label has spent on the artist. So that means studio costs, that means advances, that means payment for music videos, all those things, the money that's coming in from streaming, that 20% of the streaming income, is actually going to recoup the artist's debt. So that's where a lot of the money is actually going. There's a lot of money being made from streaming, a lot of money. And this is right now before streaming has really even caught on. It's going to get bigger and bigger still. That being said, most of it's going to the record labels. So what else is new, right? That's the way it's always been. That's the way it is today. And even though for a short time there, we thought that the record labels were kind of on their last legs and maybe we're going to be phased out for a new paradigm, that seems to have shifted back. The record labels have figured out how to take control again and they've figured out how to make more money than ever. Universal making $4 million a day from streaming, that's certainly going to go up. The amount that's paid out to artists will not. If you have any questions or comments, please send them to questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. That's questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. Don't forget to check out my new Brand Your Music Crash Course, as well as my 101 Mixing Tricks program, and my other online video courses. Go to Bobby Osinski Courses, all one word, to learn more. The next thing I want to talk about is sort of a revolutionary product that has gone under the radar, and that's Yamaha's new transacoustic acoustic guitar. This is a pretty amazing development. Now, here's what it does. Without any external amplifiers, you can add chorusing and reverb. Yeah, you don't need anything special. There's not a speaker built into it, and you don't plug it into an external amplifier. You just turn the sucker on, and you hear reverb. And if you want, you can dial in chorus. Pretty amazing, huh? So how does it do it? Well, there's a little actuator that's installed on the inner surface of the top of the guitar. What it does is it senses the vibrations of the strings, and it sends those vibrations back to a little digital signal processing that's on board. which then sends it back to the body of the guitar and to the air in and around the guitar body. So again, there's no amplifiers. There's no speaker built into the guitar, and yet you're getting reverb and you're getting chorusing. This is very, very cool. And again, it's sort of gone under the radar. How much does this cost? Well, about $1,500 for the entry model. That being said, it's only available in Europe right now. It still hasn't been introduced into the States. So what I'm basing that on is the European price in euros. So when we convert it out, it's about $1,500. Even so, just imagine that. Yes, it's cheaper to buy an amplifier and to do it that way, but this is such a cool technology. And I wonder if it can be applied to other places as well. It'd be very cool. So anyway, look out for that. It's the Yamaha Transacoustic Guitar. My guest today is Flipagram head of music, John Bolton. At Flipagram, John is in charge of all things music, including the strategy, licensing, product, partnerships, programming, and operations. Prior to joining Flipagram, he was the founder and head of product at Move Music, which is one of the largest subscription music services in the United States. I spoke with John via Skype from his office in Los Angeles. Tell me about Flipagram. So how did Flipagram get started? I know it has very interesting implications to the music business. So that's really what I want to talk about, find out how it affects the music business.
Yeah, of course. So the company, the app was launched about 3 years ago, and it really was 2 years ago that it kind of lit up and became really known as a force. But there was two guys that started it, and really the need was very simple. It was, I want to be able to take the pictures off of my phone and put them into a video, because Instagram and other photo sharing services don't really accommodate that, and I want to do more than just share a photo. And it was just that basic need. And it was a paid app, and it didn't have that many users, but it was really December of 2013 that it was relaunched as a free app. And of course, they added the music component to it as well. And that combination of being free with the free music clips just created an explosion of demand. It was really New Year's 2013. And millions of people downloaded the app in just, you know, in a couple of days, and you know, and it's just been this amazing story ever since. I joined the company very shortly after its main launch in late 2013. I joined early 2014, and you know, the founders of the company didn't have much experience with the music industry. Really, just tech entrepreneurs who found themselves in the middle of what really, I believe, is a major shift in the music experience. And so, you know, immediately engaged the music industry to figure out how to get this working the right way, get it licensed and get it, you know, in a place that, you know, get the digital music supply chain set up, get the relationships with the labels and the artists I've known and get them educated so that they can use it as a way to promote their music and themselves and engage fans. And, you know, the service really started out as just a simple video maker, a little tool. But the demand for it was so massive that obviously we wanted to evolve it into a platform, into a network similar to an Instagram or a Facebook. And so it's over a year now that we launched the network component of that, and really the big part of the network is to allow artists to come on and create Flipagrams promoting their music. But I think even more exciting is it allows their fans to use their music around this new use case.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. Getting the licenses from the major labels must have been crazy. That's not easy.
No, it was, I mean, frankly, it was the hardest thing I've done in my career. I've never, I've, so You may be familiar. I was just looking at your background. Really interesting, by the way. And the book you wrote on, I haven't read it, but I just can't believe how relevant what you wrote is to what we're doing. But I was one of the founders of a company called Move Music.
Oh, yeah.
Which was the, and so I have a lot of experience in music and I've done deals before with the music industry, a lot of music deals. Nothing compared to this one because it was just, it's an entirely new use case and it's a global one. And it really crossed divisions within the music industry because it's not a streaming service. We're not a listening experience. This is video creating with music, adding music and sharing across social media at scale. And so we really had to push the envelope, and the industry really pushed the envelope to make this one work. So yeah, very, very difficult, but I think a major step for the industry, a major step for us as a company. And I'll tell you, I think there's a macro trend here that's happening around music and social media and creation with music and personalization with music that is just getting started.
I'm curious then, when the company made the transition and actually included music, was the licensing agreement with the major labels something that was intended, or was that just something that almost was forced because of the fact that people were using unauthorized music behind their flips?
Well, the service, when it started out with the music, was a very limited implementation. And once it was realized that this was something that was a powerful combination with the core app and the core use case, almost immediately we were engaged with the music industry. And, you know, I can't get too into the details, but it was a difficult situation. And, you know, we worked very quickly with all the majors and even the indie labels and publishers to get it worked out. For the rights holders that didn't want to do that, we removed content. And for those that, you know, wanted to get a deal done quickly, we got a deal done quickly. So it was challenging, but we got it done.
What's the royalty rate? The royalty rate for a songwriter then, or an artist?
I can't share that number, but it's, you know, we think that what we've established with both the labels and publishers is reasonable and fair, considering we're still very early stage. We're not monetizing yet. We will soon. But I can't disclose that number.
Okay.
Those numbers.
Because that's a major sticking point, obviously, for a lot of artists. And I can see where they're coming from. I don't always agree with them. From the standpoint that they look at what they're making per stream from, you know, you name the service, it doesn't matter. And the claim is, wow, this is so little, without realizing that the scale is different, because now we're talking tens, if not hundreds of millions of streams, which make a completely different mindset on this, which a lot of artists haven't really bought into yet. But it's still a really important thing in the minds of all artists. They want to see what they're making.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the reasons I think this is a big step forward for the entire industry, this deal, is that right now there is a lot of music consumption, music sharing happening on other social networks like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And those companies have no relationship with the music industry whatsoever. No royalties are being paid at all.
Yeah.
And they're standing behind the DMCA on that. And so we are the first social network that has acquired these rights, and we are paying for the music, and artists and writers are getting paid for use of their music or their written works on our service. And so we think that, look, we're not that big yet, right? And we think that the numbers involved are fair and meaningful and material, but if this is a trend, which we know it is, and this is something that gets others in social media like a Facebook into the game. I think this could become a very massive new revenue stream for the entire industry outside of the streaming business.
Is Slipagram only available in the U.S.?
No, we're global.
How about the licensing deals then? Are they just for the U.S. or are they global as well?
They're global as well.
Wow.
Obviously, there are some small restrictions in certain territories, but we're global and the licenses are global.
Wow. Good job on that. Gee.
Thank you. Thank you.
No wonder it was so difficult.
It really was. It really was. But I think ultimately, we think this is a great thing for, it's a great thing for us for sure. But I really believe it's a great thing for the industry. I mean, I look at the state of the industry today, and it's great to see streaming growing and Apple Music numbers. But I'm not sure that it's ever going to get to a place that makes everyone happy. And so what I see with Flipagram, and what I do really believe is a macro trend of personalization and consumption and creation with music in social media, I do believe this is going to be much larger than us and be used by hundreds of millions of people in time. And if that does happen, I believe there's another major new revenue stream that could come to artists and writers.
That'd be great. I mean, no one ever says no to that, that's for sure. Okay, a question for you then. Is there, and I didn't see this on the site anywhere, I'm sure it's probably there, but just so I know, is there a length, the maximum length to each flip?
No, there's no limit. Our average length is a little over 30 seconds. Just because it's videos that people are using to make for social media, and as you know, social media is bite size, is short form in general. Now we consider ourselves a storytelling network where people want to tell more than just one little video clip or one photo like you see on an Instagram or Twitter. However, it's still social media, and when you have a feed of videos, you don't want to make it too long or you won't have the engagement. So no limit, and we do see some in the minute range or a little over a minute, but rarely do we see long flipograms to 2 minutes plus.
What's interesting there is the fact that, yes, you are telling a story, but that's not easy, especially in 30 seconds or so. So do you see your users become more accustomed to it as they go on? Do they have a good idea what to do? How does that work? Or do you teach them how to actually be good at it?
I mean, it's our audience is very young, and they're digital natives. So, taking a few pictures and videos and adding some music for the bulk of our users is second nature. And, one of the reasons we have been able to scale so quickly and so broadly is that to make a flipagram is actually very easy compared to making a YouTube video. If you've ever used other video editing apps in the App Store, they're pretty sophisticated. Or if you ever used iMovie, that's very complicated. We're orders of magnitude easier to make than those types of services and platforms, but we also are harder to do than post a picture like you do on Instagram. And so that's kind of where we see ourselves elbowing in this space of, short, easy to make videos with music, which is a lot easier to do than a great YouTube video, a little bit harder than Instagram. We've had over 200 million unique people across on the platform in 2 years. And so a lot of the users that are coming back are definitely getting better. And you see it. I mean, I follow a lot of different people, influencers on Flipagram, and you see them continuing to evolve and get better at, cutting video the right way and timing it with the music or having text done in a nice way. And of course, our service has evolved quite a bit in recent months as well. That just has made it even easier to make a flipagram.
Is there a common thread between your most influential users? Is there something that they're doing that makes them so?
I think, I mean, nothing pops in mind, but I think diversity of content, you know, selection of music, you know, I think those are probably, you know, they're doing something new. Whenever they create a flippogram, it's compelling visually, compelling audibly, and has a little bit of duration. There's a massive amount of creation happening on our network, and a lot of it is stuff that, you know, I think me or you would look at and say that's not really interesting. However, it's very interesting to that person's immediate circle of friends, because it is telling a story that's relevant to them. But influencers that have broad audience are really creating compelling content that you would see on a YouTube or you would see in your feed in Facebook. There's a lot of stop motion creators, actually. The stop motion is very, very powerful. I'll tell you what, you do a stop motion video of your cat eating food and you put a song to it, it's really compelling. And so, you know, again, the use case is evolving, but you really do see all kinds of things happening. And it's from really mundane, seemingly not interesting to us, to extraordinary stuff.
How about discovery? I see you use hashtags. Is that the primary way to discover new flippograms or influencers or users?
Yeah, hashtag, there's trending hashtags. You know, today's Star Wars Day, and Star Wars is trending on Flippagram, and there's a Star Wars channel in Explore right now, and of course there's some great Star Wars content with Star Wars music in there. You know, finding interesting people, whether it's friends or influencers. You know, I follow a lot of the artists. Like right now, the Chainsmokers is a really active artist on Flippagram, and they've got a couple of hot singles out, and they're making amazing flippograms. So their content just appears in my feed because I follow them. You can also follow like certain categories. Like we have the beauty channel, the comedy channel, the art channel, the food channel, and you know, you can choose to follow one of these channels, and we have curators that are constantly featuring you know, by category, that stuff. And you know, the food, follow food, it's some amazing things that just regular people are making, these amazing videos on how to make certain things that you would never think. Or you know, we have a lot of young females. The beauty channel is really popular. And there's just a lot of these self-starters doing these makeup tutorials that get huge engagement.
What's the demographic then? Is it, 13 to 18 or 24? Or where does it go?
Yeah, I mean, the majority is under 24.
Yeah.
And the majority is female. Hmm. So very young. Very young, very female, but we do see a really broad array of users, you know, from Pitbull and Pharrell to Jessica Alba, you know, to Rosie O'Donnell, and you know, you see a lot of photographers, professional photographers, I mean, you name it, you see a ton of stuff, but by the numbers, young female are the core force of our growth.
Well, I don't think you can ever go wrong with that. If you're going to pick a demo, that's a good one to have.
Yeah, I mean, look, they love technology. They're good at it. They have time to do it. And you know, they're the early adopters. They're great early adopters, and we've embraced them. They've embraced us. But we're seeing that their adoption of Flippagram is definitely leading us to new demographics, because you know, Flippagrams are most of them are actually shared on Flippagram, but also shared on other platforms like Facebook or Instagram. And so, you know, imagine a young female who has 100 followers on Facebook and Instagram or more, And when they make that flippogram, it has our watermark, and all of those people see that and they say, oh wow, that looks really neat. I want to go make a flippogram. And so they, you know, they'll come and download the app, and that's a, they're a big part of us, of our growth in bringing in new users.
This is only a mobile app then, right?
Correct. You can only make flippograms on your Android or iPhone, or even, we even have an Amazon and Windows phone. But that's correct. You can view flippograms on the web, on the desktop web, but you can only create on mobile.
I looked at a bunch of them before, and I didn't find any that didn't have music. Do most of them have music, or are there some that are just voice only?
The vast majority uses music. You have a very, very small percentage that does voice, and a similar percentage that is just silent. And, you know, a lot of people like to use our video edit. Our video editing is actually really, really simple. So you have a lot of people who actually are using us because they it's less about the music and whatever audio, whether it's voice or just background that's in the video, really lead. But it's a small minority that do that.
I have to go check that out. Check the editor out. That's one thing I didn't do before I talked to you, and I wish I would have actually, because it seems pretty cool.
Check it out.
Let's talk about the music industry just for a second, because you have a great depth of knowledge in it, having been at Move Music before and Cricket before that. Does it seem to you that content just for mobile is kind of obsolete, where now content is just content and it doesn't matter where it goes? Am I wrong with that?
Well, I think flippograms in particular, if you make a flippogram, you can view that flippogram just about anywhere. You can view, you know, you can make a flippogram and watch it on your Apple TV, and the resolution and the video quality is good enough for your television. It's good enough when you watch, like if you go and watch a flippogram on your desktop, and you hit the make full screen button, it's good quality and it's full screen. And so, you know, these mobile videos that are being made in Flippogram really are portable beyond mobile. However, that said, you look at the numbers and mobile video is taking over the world. And I do think that there is a time where, I mean, look, there's always going to be a place for TV, but it is going to be a much smaller place than it is now. And the mobile phone is just continuing to grow. I mean, you look at the numbers of Facebook, YouTube, and Snapchat, they are monstrously huge. And it's just beginning. So I think mobile content is sort of the end-all be-all in time.
Speaking of mobile content, and more specifically a flippogram, do you think that makes a more compelling reason to have a larger phone, one with a larger display?
I do. I mean, I think when you look at Android and iPhone, both, I mean, their screens in just the past few years have almost doubled. And when you watch a flippogram in our feed, if you know, you watch videos in your flippogram feed, which are full screen, and you watch that on an iPhone 6 Plus or the Galaxy, it's stunning. It's amazing, and it really, you know, when you watch kids today, that, you know, that's fine for them. I love my big screen television at home, but kids today, that's not a big deal to them. That iPhone 6 Plus is their big screen, and they're 1,000% happy with it. So for sure, I think that's another reason that mobile and mobile video continues to just dominate and grow the way it is.
I must say, I reluctantly went to an iPhone 6 Plus, and just thinking it'd be too big to fit in my pocket, but, you know, I wouldn't go back now with the big screen. It's just something I couldn't live without.
Exactly. By the way, I think the iPhone 6 Plus has basically made the iPad obsolete.
I think you're right. I have an iPad, too, and I used to use it just mostly for reading books, and now I find I don't even need that.
Exactly. I have an iPad. I do not use it anymore. My phone's big enough.
Yeah, definitely. So getting into the music business in general, where do you see it going? We'll just take a global look at the music business.
I think just fundamentally, I think the core challenge with the industry is that there's too much free music everywhere. I mean, between FM radio, YouTube, piracy, and Pandora, those are you can get anything and everything right there, and you're not paying anything. So I think that is just a major headwind for the industry. That said, I think streaming is going to continue to grow. They're expecting Apple Music to hit 20 million paying subscribers. Spotify has been growing very nicely. Tidal and Rhapsody are posting decent numbers. And I think just there's a general acceptance that seems to be happening with the mass market on streaming. So I'm hopeful that it does well. But I do think it's limited, right? When you take the amount of streaming users in the world, it's like a percent. I don't even think it's a percent. It might be 1%. And that's not very good. The rest of the world is listening to music, I assure you, but none of them are paying. So I do think, and just I've been at Flipagram now for over 2 years, and what I'm seeing at Flipagram, and I watch streaming very closely and the trends very closely, I do think that digital music is going to merge with the Flipagram and Flipagram type use cases, where you're using music to tell stories, to make videos, to do lip syncs, to personalize life on social media and life in the digital world, you know, music as the ultimate filter. I think this is coming in a really big way. And I do really believe that it's going to create new revenue opportunities for the industry. So I'm very excited about what's coming for digital music. And, you know, there's a lot of naysayers and a lot, you know, my God, you read the music blogs every day and you think, the world's ending, but I really think it's just beginning. And this idea of using music in social media, I mean, Facebook has almost 1.6 billion users. Imagine if you could get just a fraction of that user base using music in a way that's like Flipagram or similar, and you have a really meaningful revenue model around that. I think that could be really interesting for everybody, including Facebook.
I think that the idea behind YouTube Red was to get that, though, and not the same as Flipagram, obviously, but to get a small percentage at least of the user base that was using it for music, uploading unauthorized music. And you don't hear anything about it, which leads me to believe that there's been very little penetration, market penetration.
Well, YouTube Red, though, is coming out of YouTube. I think that YouTube is not a social network. YouTube is a video platform. I mean, they're basically a new age, you know, NBC or ABC. YouTube is not a social network. And Facebook is really the world's social network. Yeah. And I think if you take a social use case where people are creating with music and consuming social UGC material with music, I think you really create opportunities for everybody involved to make money. I mean, here's one idea that I've been thinking about for a long time, and I this is going to happen. You know, the age of influencer marketing is here. Are you familiar with this? Where, you know, like the makeup artist on Instagram who has 5 million followers and gets X thousand dollars to do a post with a MAC Cosmetics, you know, eyeliner.
Right.
Right. It's fairly new what's happening here, but I believe that advertising is ultimately going to end up in this area where it's influencers that are creating the content for brands. And so imagine if influencers could be using music to do these compelling videos of all kinds across all verticals, and there is some commercial role for the music. You know, you could really see that idea being scaled in a way that makes a lot of people money, including the platforms, including the artists, including the influencers. You know, think about it. Imagine a television commercial without music, right? They almost all have music.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's reason, because it's powerful, it's emotional, it helps you really nail a story. It's the same thing with user-generated content. It's the same thing, what I believe, with all these influencers, whether it's a Snapchat influencer or a YouTube influencer, being able to use music to convincingly sell something, I believe is a big business idea that it's not here yet, but I think it can come.
I think you're right. It's very interesting. And especially now being exposed to Flipagram, which I wasn't previous to this, I could see how that could be very powerful. And for all the reasons that you just mentioned, it could be powerful as a branding experience. It can be powerful as a new revenue stream for songwriters, for artists, for record labels. It's very cool. Good one.
I mean, think about when you're watching YouTube and they throw up that Ford truck commercial or whatever that's, you know, almost always not relevant to you, and you hit that skip button every time, right? Get this out of my way. Get me to my content. Well, imagine if it was a video made by someone that you like or know or trust or follow that was trying to tell you about a Ford truck in the context that, you know, in a video that they made in the context of why you're following them. If you, you know, if you like some guy who reviews cars and he, you know, is getting paid by Ford to do something and he makes something that's cool with music, you're going to watch that, you know, and that's why I think influencers via social media are going to be the ultimate advertisers if you can scale it. And music has such a huge role there. And so this idea of like an ad as a pre-roll or a post-roll, I think there's a day where we can eliminate that and get down to people being able to sell products in authentic, real ways. Like, that actually moves the needle.
Yeah, I think you're right. Definitely. Last question, John. What's the best piece of business advice that you've either learned along the way or maybe somebody imparted to you?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Best piece of business advice, I would say, and I think it wasn't a piece of advice, it was, I think, by example that I've learned. I've had great mentors in my career, and the best have always been very thoughtful in developing a strategy, having a plan, and really going after and staying focused on that. It's easy to get off course and not know you're off course, but having a strategy, being strategic, looking at the competition, looking at the trends, and calculating those into your plan, and doing that very thoughtfully, I think is how you build a successful business. It's worked for me over the years.
When you're developing that strategy, that plan, how far out do you find that it's useful to look?
Well, it depends on the industry. If you're in the tech industry, plans last about a month.
Yeah.
Things change very, very quickly. What's important about a strategy is to not be too prescriptive in it. You don't want to pretend you know the exact answer to what it is you're building. It's always iterative, especially in tech. We have a vision here, and it's a very big one, and I believe in it. But we don't know exactly what it looks like, and we're iterating our way and testing our way and getting feedback from our users along the way. And we hope ultimately gets us to a place that creates a lot of value for everybody involved.
Very cool, John. Thank you so much for your time today. This is Dynamite.
Thank you, Bobby. Great to meet you.
Likewise, I enjoyed speaking with you.
Yes, me as well. Take care.
You too. To find out more about Flipagram, go to flipagram.com. That's Flipagram, all one word, flipagram.com. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyowinnercircle.com, or you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Mixcloud, and Google Play. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyowinnercircle.com, you'll find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.